This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Welcome to Baseball Outside the Box, the show that brings you the most innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds who love the challenge, the status quo. Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. We are currently shooting from the beautiful city of Vancouver, Canada. We are at the BC Baseball Coaches Convention, one of the best baseball conventions in the world. We've been here for the last 7 years. We have some outstanding speakers at the convention covering all kinds of topics. And we are very lucky to have four of those speakers who will be talking to us on Baseball Outside the Box. We'll be interviewing Tom House on different things about pitching mechanics, Jeff Kroeschel when it comes to athletic development, Dr. Bill Harrison and vision, and along with Bob Elliott, Hall of Fame sports writer, about the qualities of being a manager and coach. So we're excited about the show. Before we start, don't forget, please go to our website, baseballoutsidethebox.com. Join the show if you haven't joined it. Just hit iTunes or the Stitcher logo. And at the same time, if you really like the show and really want to help us, go ahead and give us a 5-star rating and review. That helps really get the show out. Every time there's a better rating, people see that and they want to go to the show. Don't forget, go to lineupmediagroup.com where you see a lot of our podcasts. There are different types of shows. Email me at info@baseballoutsidethebox.com. Love getting your emails, whether it's about, you know, something critical of the show that we need to change, or something that we do really well, or just baseball questions when it comes to the development of the sport. Please email us again, info@baseballoutsidethebox.com. When you go to the website, baseballoutsidethebox.com, don't forget we've got our 5-set DVD series for coaches where we have over 100 games and drills that will help you run a fun, organized practice. You can order DVDs online. So go to baseballoutsidethebox.com. And now just a brief note about our speakers, a little background. The first speaker will be Tom House. Tom is the owner of, and it's Dr. Tom House, is the owner of National Pitching Association. He's been in the game a long time. He started off as a major league player. He pitched in the big leagues for over 10 years. Then he went on to be a pitching coach in the big leagues, also pitching coach in Japan. He's been all over the world. He's a world-renowned research and development guy when it comes to the biomechanics of pitching and throwing. He's well sought out from everyone at all levels of the game. He is definitely the godfather when it comes to the pitching and throwing mechanics. He's done so much research. He's also on the advisory board for the American Sports Medical Institute. You can go to ASMI.org. That's Dr. Andrews. Tom is on their advisory board. So we're looking forward to talking to Tom. We're going to discuss some certain things with pitch counts, mental, emotional parts of the game, and the biomechanics. Following Tom will be Jeff Kroeschel of Crush Performance. Jeff is an outstanding speaker, and he's one of the best athletic development, strength and conditioning guys anywhere in the world. I put him at the top. He has so much passion and dedication to the sport. He's got a great podcast. Before I mention the podcast, I'm going to tell you, Jeff has worked all over the world with all kinds of sports, but he's worked with Major League Baseball and the athletic development and the major academies that are held around the world. He lays out their athletic development programs. He's also has his own podcast. That's crushperformance.com. Go to the website. Crush is K-R-U-S-H, performance.com. Check that out. We're going to talk to Crush about the, you know, importance of athletic development when it comes to young athletes, and also the issues of specialization. You know, should players be specializing in one sport at a young age? And there's a window of opportunity there where athletic development is important. We're going to discuss that also with Jeff. Following Jeff, the third hitter will be Dr. Bill Harrison. Dr. Bill Harrison is a vision expert, not just in vision, but also in the development of the visual aspect of tracking the baseball and identifying certain pitches and locations along with hitting and pitching. He started in the 70s with the Royals Baseball Academy, where they had athletes come to the academy and develop them in all aspects of the game. Bill's been around. They've been training coaches with coaches and players with major league teams. They've trained athletes from all over the world, again, all kinds of sports. Dr. Harrison currently is working with Ryan, his son, with the San Francisco Giants in spring training, but they've also worked with the world champion collegiate team this year. And we're looking forward to having Dr. Harrison on the show. We're going to be talking to him about how, you know, youngsters, how to pick up the baseball, how to track it, how balance affects your swing, you know, how to focus and concentrate on throwing to locations if you're a pitcher, if you're an infielder, what to do there. We'll mention some drills. It's going to be exciting. And our fourth hitter will be Bob Elliott. Bob Elliott is a Hall of Fame sports writer from Canada. Bob is coming to convention for many years. I met him 4 years ago. He is outstanding. He's just a super person. We look forward to having Bob on the show. Bob's going to be talking about the qualities, and he's been in the game over 35 years, but he's going to talk about the qualities of the managers that he's seen over his career at the big league level, you know, and what managers have done over the years to change, to kind of change with the players because the times are changing. So we're going to be talking about the past managers in the older days to the current ones and what their qualities are. I think you'll find that exciting. So first of all, let's get started. We are going to be doing an interview with Dr. Tom House.
We're excited, and we have one of the top speakers here that anybody wants to listen to from all over the world, Mr. Dr. Tom House. If you don't know Tom, he is the expert when it comes to pitching and throwing. We've already gone over his bio. You got a little idea about him, so he's given us some time here at the convention. I've known Tom for over 30 years. There isn't a better individual when it comes to working with pitchers and throwers and making sure that biomechanically they are some of the best. And we're just going to discuss a little bit about the mechanics of pitching, but also the issue that's going on around the world, why young kids are getting hurt. So first of all, I just want to welcome Mr. Dr. Tom House.
Pete, it's great to be here. And you and I go back a long way. We've been trying to figure out this injury thing for, 35 years you and I have been hanging out. And the science is getting better, but unfortunately the application between the lines is about what it was 25 years ago. So real quick, you ask about healthy arms, it's a function of three things: biomechanical efficiency, functional strength, and pitch totals or workloads. And for the listeners out there that don't know biomechanics or don't know conditioning, if they just count pitches, you're reducing the risk of injury. Everywhere I go, there's no reason to go anywhere else but ASMI.org for Dr. Fleissig's pitch per inning, per game, per week, per month, per season. It holds up really well. On the conditioning side of the equation, obviously you have to have the functional strength to handle pitching mechanics and throwing workloads. People put that backwards. They're working on mechanics before they get strength. It's got to be strength first, then mechanics. And if you're having trouble finding where the best, the best way to teach strength, think body work first, working against your own body, and then heavy weights, not till your junior or senior year in high school. And then obviously mechanics are really simple. I'm going to make them easy for you. It's keep your eyes level, keep your glove in front, go fast, and drag your back foot. That's it. And when I do lectures, it's obviously more than that when you put it up on a screen. But if a kid keeps his eyes level, he really, really goes as fast as he can, he keeps his glove in front of his body, and he drags his back foot till the ball leaves his hand, that's all the mechanics you need. Hope that helped.
Yeah, and also just want to ask you, with the mechanics, you got a lot of coaches around the world. You got young kids, they're training them at 8 years old, 9, 10. And when they first start them, you know, is it every day they should be working with the kids as possible, you know, on the mechanics? Is it, you know, once they work with them every day, is there a workload because they made a throw ball in practice, whether they're on flat ground or mound, any of that can help our coaches?
You're setting me up perfectly, Pete. I appreciate it. Do all your work on flat ground. Do your heavy stuff, large throwing totals on flat ground. It's just overall easier on the arm. And once they've developed, and I'm getting a little deep here, but
it's okay.
From age probably 7 to testosterone for a boy, it's about the nervous system. Doesn't do you any good to do strength training with anything heavier than the body up until that time. From 13 until junior, senior in high school, it's about muscle. And if in those two time frames, nerves can talk to muscle and there's a little skill, That's good. But really, don't worry about skill until you've got nerves and muscle that understand what skill is. And I'm going to scare everybody in the audience real quick. If you're skilled at 14, you're not playing at 18. So if you're good, that's nice, but it's not necessary. Don't worry about skill till junior, senior in high school.
Awesome. And now, kids are going to pitch. In the game of baseball, they got a lot of time to think.
Right.
Between pitches, between at-bats, they strike out, they come back. You talk about mental and emotional. What's some techniques that, you know, just for coaches, that they can help young kids with dealing with the failure aspect of the game?
Well, we know that baseball is a game of failure, and I call it anchoring. If a kid is in a pitch-to-pitch, catch-to-catch, swing-to-swing thing, if he's still thinking about something 20 seconds ago, he's not ready for what matters, and that's this pitch. So 20 seconds between physical activities per inning, and then 3 hours after a game. The easiest way to move on to what matters is to ask yourself why you were bad or why you were good, and apply it to the only pitch that matters, this pitch.
And what do you recommend during games when a young kid's struggling, you know, and a coach is there and wants to figure out what he's doing wrong, or should he take him out? Is there a philosophy that you follow, or strategic things you follow?
Literally, you can't work on skills, mechanics, in competition. So you do all your preparation work, and I call it, you know, prepare for the game, let the game play itself. Don't try to do mechanical things during the game. Compete, and then after the game, or before the game, is when you work on things to make the game more efficient.
Now, we can look at, we told the coaches to go smi.org and check out the pitch counts and all that. What about when, you know, kids are pitching in the winter? You know, we get a lot of kids in the winter that pitch, and they pitch off a mound, and they never get a break off pitching. You know, what's the guidelines for that? They can follow the pitch counts and all that, but what's the guidelines in the off season?
Well, the doctors, to me, all the high, you know, the high octane orthopedic surgeons that are out there, Dr. Andrews being the leader of the pack, they're saying kids should not throw anything for 2 to 4 months. I personally, our research is showing that you throw year round, but you stay off the mound for 2 to 4 months. And if a kid is growing and gaining weight and his mechanics aren't really good, that might be the guy that stays off the mound for a full 4 months. But you have to throw year round. Otherwise your arm loses the adaptation to accommodate. So throw year round, but stay off the mound 2 to 4 months. Let your arm recover from the mound. Everything else takes care of itself.
All right, here's a big one, big controversy in the U.S. Long toss, you know, obviously you talked about what to do to increase, you know, your mechanics and all that. What about long toss? How should it be done? How should it be done a little bit, and how long?
Long toss is huge, but long toss, in spite of what people think, is as far as you can throw perfectly. And you throw long toss year-round to your level of intensity where you can go maximum effort perfectly. So the day after you pitched in a ball game, you're a little stiff and sore, long toss might be 75 feet. You haven't thrown for a week, you feel really good. Long toss might be 250 feet. But long toss is maximum intensity with perfect mechanics. And you should do that 3, maybe 4 times a week.
And on a straight line or up high or?
Literally, bad mechanics. You don't cast the ball when you're throwing to home plate. You try to throw it on a line. Probably the easiest way to visualize that, if you were an outfielder throwing to your cutoff man, that's the biggest hump that you put in the ball. You know, there are people out there that are good friends of mine that believe differently than that. That's a belief system. It's not science.
And that's what I love about you, because, you know, if I'm going to teach something, I want some science behind it. Now, but help me out here. Long toss, what does it actually do? Because everybody says do it, but what does it do? Why is it good for you?
Okay. It is not a strength builder. It's an endurance builder. And it takes two of those pieces. Strength is how much weight can you move. Endurance is how many times can you move it. So long toss builds endurance. And again, it's necessary 3 to 4 times a week for a lifetime. Start when you're in little league, and say you get 15 years in the big leagues, you should still be throwing long toss as far as you can throw perfectly on a line with no hump 3 to 4 times a week.
Awesome. And lastly, now we got the mechanics, we got all that down, but now young kids, how they eat. You know, the body's got to be maintained, you know, otherwise I'm assuming they're not going to be perfect when it goes out to the field. So a little bit of advice on the nutritional aspect, how important, so we could reach the young kids.
Okay, it's huge. We don't do really well with nutrition in our United States. Think of nutrition and sleep as recovery. An athlete that recovers in 2 days rather than 3 days because of his diet, his sleep, and his ability to use aerobic and anaerobic activity in his conditioning, that athlete that recovers in 2 days plays and the other athletes go home. So recovery is huge, and there's all kinds of good nutrition programs out there. Without selling right here, just go to nationalpitching.com and follow those guidelines. They work pretty good.
That's great. Tom, we really appreciate your time.
All right, my pleasure. Anytime. You make this easy. Thanks for the softballs.
This is Pete Caliendo, Baseball Outside the Box with Tom House. Don't forget, go to nationalpitching.com. You can get a lot of information there, and Tom is accessible. The MPA program is not only in the U.S., but all over the world. You'll see national directors there. We're excited to have Tom. That was awesome. So we will see you with our next guest. This is, again, Pete Caliendo, your host with Baseball Outside the Box. We are in Vancouver at a beautiful baseball convention, BC Baseball. They do a great job organizing coaches' clinics along with development of players. And we've got some great speakers here. You just heard Tom House a few minutes ago, and now we've got one of the best people in the game when it comes to athletic development, development of the game, the mental, the nutritional, you name it, the athletic development. He formerly with Major League Baseball at one time, we already told you his background a little bit, but this guy's outstanding. And I want to tell you, we're going to talk 10 minutes and introduce a little bit about what we're going to talk about in the show coming up later on this week. So first of all, Jeff Kruschel from Crush Performance. That's K-R-U-S-H Performance. And if you want to go to his website, crushperformance.com. And he also has an outstanding podcast that I listen to every week, all the time. And we'll get you more information on that. But first of all, I want to thank Jeff for being on the show and welcome.
Thanks, Pete. Glad to be here, my good man.
All right, man. I know you got a lot of energy. You just got done like 2-3 hours in a row, and you still got a lot of energy. And I think that's important. I think energy is important anytime you're talking to people and working with kids and showing enthusiasm. You're definitely one of the best at it. But let's talk about where you believe, because you know where the game's going development-wise. Tell us a little bit about where you think it's heading, and not only where it's heading, but where you believe it should be heading.
Yeah, I know. Interesting stuff. And I've been blessed in the game of baseball, Pete. I'm telling you right now, I've had a chance to, you know, work with baseball Canada. I've had a chance to work with the Blue Jays and build that program back in the day in the minor leagues and in the big leagues. And then I've also been really lucky to be affiliated with Major League Baseball on their international development game. And I'll tell you right now, the international side, going to Africa, all through Europe, working with the Chinese team, and even down into Central and South America now, has been a real eye-opener. You know, one thing that I've learned through all this travel and, you know, working at the highest level of the game, it doesn't matter where we're at. The issues and the things we're facing in terms of getting the most out of our players or creating the biggest, greatest opportunities for our players, it's the same at every single level. The game is moving more and more, I'm proud to say and happy to say, towards development. Injury prevention is driving that quite a bit. Mm-hmm. If you look where the game's at right now, that's a conversation we'll have in the show for sure, because that's important. But we're really starting to understand. See, we've gotten a little bit smarter, but the human body hasn't changed that much. So as we get smarter and we understand the process of development, we can now start, you know, attacking players at a younger age to help them, one, you know, increase their performance and create opportunity for themselves, two, really decrease the risk of injuries. But we open up the doors of opportunity, and we're creating a love for the game. We know how hard this game is.
Yeah.
If you teach a kid to field a ball or maybe help make better contact with the ball, they have fun. And when they're having fun, they're playing. And I do believe, you know, at the developmental level, that's where the game's going.
That's great. Now listen, you know, you mentioned that, you know, kids are going to fail, and they're going to, and unfortunately it is a game of failure. And also it's a game where you have a lot of time to stand around, which a lot of games don't have that. What's one way that you can explain to coaches a little bit how kids can deal with that standing around, or maybe they just struck out, right? And now they go back in the dugout and they got to think about it, because you got two more outs to think about that, then go back on the field.
Again, another incredibly important conversation. As coaches, I'm a coach, you're a coach, we're talking to coaches. Our job is to create an environment where athletes can succeed. And in order for athletes to succeed, Pete, listen, we have got to embrace, accept, and even, you know, worship failure. We have to learn how to handle and embrace failure. When we do that, trust me, when kids start making mistakes, they love it. We have to teach kids how to learn from their mistakes. This is what we say to every single group we work with. A problem accurately defined is already partially solved. If we see a kid, you know, repeating an error, and we haven't broken down, or if we don't clearly communicate why it might be happening, how can we ever hope to fix it? But if we start looking and analyzing, and I'm not talking about anything crazy, but if we start just understanding the principles of why something might be going wrong for a kid, agility, coordination, strength, focus, maybe there's so many things we can work on. Not only do we start addressing the issues that might help that player be successful, but we also teach him how to cope, learn, and they can take that well beyond the world of sport.
Absolutely. That's awesome. And then the other thing is, you know, baseball is a game where, you know, the guys are going to be playing, they're standing around, but they're also, you said they fail, right? When they fail, and just so you know, the audience, we're going to be having Jeff on the show for an hour, so we're going to be talking a lot of these topics. But it's also a game where in the games, they're standing around a lot, right? So they play 100 games, some of these young kids. They practice a lot, but they don't move a lot. So I noticed all the drills you're doing on movement. You know, how important is movement in teaching the game? Because the baseball coaches really don't teach it a lot.
Right. Well, I think you're opening up a Pandora's box in terms of a conversation. Because if all we do is play the game, Pete, we really, really are lowering the ceiling of development. And I'm talking about when kids get older, you know. We need to use the game as sort of the reference point for how we're going to work with our athletes in practice. That's all the games are, especially in the developmental levels, but even at the major league level. How they perform in the heat of battle will really determine the things we need to work on. Look, this is what we say, Pete. Look, if we're going to set up a practice, we need to have a purpose or a reason for that practice. Look, unfortunately, we sort of, I think collectively, get into this rut of backwards thinking, where we throw out some exercises and go, okay, let's do this hitting drill, let's do that movement drill, let's do this fielding drill, without really understanding why we're doing them. Imagine this. Imagine we start lining up our practices and we go, okay, for the next three practices, here's going to be the theme of what we're working on. Ground balls, movement, or good footwork, whatever it might be, you can decide. But then you start plugging in the exercises to help accomplish that goal. This is the process we need. And over the course of the year, if you map out your entire year, you would not believe the things you can address. But at the end of the day, especially at the developmental levels, you would not believe the performance gains you get from your players. So purpose first, understanding why you need to do something or what you're doing, defining the problem accurately, and then figuring out the exercises, drills, and stresses in the body that will help you accomplish or achieve or overcome the issue you're trying to attack.
And now, what about, let's talk about just quickly, and then we got a couple more questions, then obviously we'll be on the show. You know, when you're practicing, when you look at practice and you say an hour and a half, right? As you mentioned, we, as baseball coaches, we teach a lot of skill work, but we need a lot of athletic movement. What's the percentage of athletic movement you should be working on in a practice? Because we only look at throwing, hitting, fielding, and all that, but we don't teach the footwork a lot.
Right. I would honestly say, Pete, that depends on the year. You know, as we look at the season, for example, you know, if we're looking at getting on the field in May, April or May, you know, when we're looking at February and March, that's where I would just attack movement drills. Yeah, maybe add in a few baseball things, but teach these guys to move. Yeah. And then when you start getting into your baseball drills, we have limited time. But I'll tell you this, if you can dedicate 10 to 12 to 15 minutes at the start of your practice to a movement period, a warm-up movement period, and then maybe 5 or 6 minutes at the end of every practice where there's lateral, backwards, and forwards movement, change of directions, game changer. Yeah. Absolute game changer.
And the younger they are, the better.
The younger, the better, without question. We have big league guys who, I haven't worked with an athlete in any sport, leave alone baseball, that hasn't said, man, how is it possible I haven't been taught this before? I'm going, well, we don't know that. All we know is here we are now.
And what's the reason? Why, if we reach them at 8 years old, what's the reason to get them at 8? Because at 15, are they going to be able to develop their footwork?
Well, there's windows of opportunity, and we'll talk about this more. Perfect. There's windows of opportunity and when in human development, and if you don't take advantage of those windows, they're gone, and you cannot recapture it. That's the tough part. And there's a lot, that's a deep, long conversation. There's a lot that needs to be considered there. But we need to make sure that in the developmental model, we're addressing the things that need to be addressed in sequence. Unfortunately, we want to peak by Friday. We want everybody to be a big league hitter or big league infielder, right? Which is all fun, and that's fun, and that's part of the game and practice. But when we're talking about development, hey man, long-term development, that's the key.
Perfect. And lastly, another thing we're going to talk on the show is specialization, you know, and I'm going to use the U.S. because we got kids playing, you know, travel ball at 8 years old, 9 years old, all year round. Tell us about that a little bit.
Well, it's not just the U.S., my good man. I've been, again, privileged to be part of the MLB's International Development Program. It's everywhere. And I'm telling you, if you look at the injury issues we're now seeing in baseball, it's an epidemic. You might call it a pandemic. It's a major concern. And trust me, these kids aren't getting broken in professional baseball. They're broken long before they get there. Specialization has a lot to do with it. It's a big conversation, Pete, but I'm telling you right now, if you specialize in baseball before the age of 10, 11, or 12, you're playing a dangerous, dangerous game when it comes to sealing a potential.
All right, everybody from around the world, you heard that. Jeff Kruschel, Crush Performance, K-R-U-S-H, performance.com. Go to the website. He's going to be on. We're going to have a full-hour show. It's going to be outstanding. You can tell the excitement. And, you know, it's not just going to be an exciting show, but it's going to be one of the most informative and knowledgeable shows that we're going to have ever on this show. So, Jeff, again, just want to thank you. Again, we're in Vancouver with BC Baseball. And, Jeff, thank you very much.
All right, Pete.
And right now with us is one of the best vision doctors in the world when it comes to training professional athletes, amateurs, in any sport, but we're going to concentrate on baseball. We have Dr. Bill Harrison with us, and you know, it's just an honor because Bill goes back over 40 years. He started in professional baseball, and we gave the background earlier, so we're not going to repeat everything, but we're going to talk to Bill about vision in baseball. And first of all, I just want to welcome Bill and thank him for being on the show.
Thank you. My pleasure, Pete. I've enjoyed this opportunity.
And I know that everybody's enjoyed your time here at the convention because, you know, vision's so important, but I'm not sure there's a lot of people that really understand it when it comes to the game of baseball.
It takes a while because most people, when they think of vision, primarily it's about whether you see clearly or not. And it's hard to understand that it's important how your two eyes work together. And also, many people will say you can't get the eyes to function better. They are what they are. But that's a lack of understanding. The eyes are, once you have good, healthy eyes with clear eyesight, it's really a lot about the muscles of the eyes that are involved in tracking, involved in inspecting, involved in processing information. So muscles are trainable in the eyes just like they are for the voice box or other parts of the body, obviously.
Now, if we step back a second, I remember, you know, reading your book, and obviously, and guys my age will remember it, you know, you started in the early 70s and with the Kansas City Baseball Academy, which was an experimental camp bringing in athletes and making them baseball players. But you were able to tell us a little bit how you were able, the owner called you and wanted you to be part of the program. But in those days, it was difficult because, I mean, if it's tough now to get coaches to understand it, it must have really been tough back then.
Well, to some degree, however, once we had the opportunity to go into some depth, they jumped on board. What Mr. Coffin, the owner of the Royals, he was intrigued, but he sent out a major league player who was Ed Kirkpatrick. God bless Ed's deceased now, but Ed was considered a high-level draft choice by the Angels, but never performed. And he says, why doesn't this guy perform at the level everybody projects? Sure enough, he had some difficulty with his depth perception, with the eye muscles tracking. And he came out, spent 3 days with me in California, went back to Mr. Coughlin, and just fortunately, this was a player who was willing to speak to the owner and say, I think this is really going to help me. And fortunately, it did. But as a result of it, Mr. Coughlin said, I'm not that interested in the academy right now. Let's start working with the major league team.
Wow.
And that was in the winter. And we had the opportunity to work with a number of young players. But one of them was Lou Piniella.
Oh, wow.
Who ended up being quite a player for the Yankees, for
yep.
sure. He'd been Rookie of the Year, but he had, you know, some weaknesses in his game. But we were exposed to really good players, Amos Otis, Freddie Patek, and it was really great opportunity at that time.
And obviously the rest is history because, you know, you've been with many major league teams, you've been with Olympic athletes, you've trained everybody that you can think of. Now, in all the training, and I know you've worked with young players, young kids also, what are the major factors? Because I know it can get a little complicated, but what's the major factors when it comes to hitting or pitching that you see that coaches need to really start focusing on to help their kids in the vision aspect so they become better at the skills.
You know, it could probably take various tracks here, but one thing that is so apparent to me is that young people have very little difficulty handling a lot of information when they're performing. And the other side of it is even the veterans perform the best when they're calm, they're focused, they're confident. And so the one encouragement, I think there's too much talking in this game, too much yelling and screaming. And the heart is right, but the kid that's hitting, even taking batting practice, he can't shift his attention to the coaches and be tracking the ball and putting a good mechanical swing on the ball at the same time. So they need to be instructed, but maybe not when they need to perform. And maybe someone ought to be coaching them. You know, I'm just thinking about this right now. Some of the instructions should be out of the cage area, and then now you're going to go hit, and here's what you're going to do. Here's the plan, and now go do it. Now afterwards, to do a after action review, say, well, here's what I saw. You were doing this. We need to work on that. We'll go back to the batting tee or some dry swings to work on that. But I think when they pitch or when they hit, they need to be allowed, like infielders. Think about infielders. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't get a lot of coaching when they're catching a lot of ground balls. They'll get a little bit. They'll stop and give them some instruction.
Right.
And one thing about defensive players in professional baseball, but I think it's true at all levels, they literally play in the zone when they're on defense. And they make phenomenal plays. They don't even know what their body is doing. The most of them could not tell you what they did, other than later they might see it on a video and say, yeah, that's what I did. But at the time, they're just responding. They're subconscious. And I think part of it is they're kind of trained that way. You know, ground ball after ground ball, left, right, yeah, in, man. And so forth. Now, the hitting now starts to get real cerebral, and then there's all this time. And just so many talented players can't perform if there's a lot of congestion going on. They got to get it down to a simple thought or two. And I think coaches need to understand that and not bombard their kids, because the other assessment, yeah, some kids can take a little more,
mm-hmm.
but you just never know what the kid, how much he can handle. Give him the chance to do his actions without thought process.
That's interesting. And you know, that's very interesting, because just for our audience around the world, this is just a little teaser with Dr. Bill Harrison. We're going to have a full show on this. We're kind of giving you an idea of what we're going to be talking about. But what's interesting, what you just said, coaches, but also I remember this. You wrote an article in Sports Illustrated. I don't remember exactly that. It was a major article a long time ago, and it talked about, you know, the tracking of the ball and the vision and all that. But it mentioned in there that, you know, when a parent is in the stands and they're talking to their kids about hitting or anything else, certain things happen and it blocks the ability to focus on the ball. Can you explain that? Because this is important when it comes to parents.
You know, I mean, one explanation is this. I mean, even before the mobile phone came along, you know, in a car you get in a conversation and drive, you're listening to the person in the back seat. You really don't see what's going on. You might react, but you react slow and maybe skid the brakes or whatever it may be. Vision is sort of fragile, and it's very easy to put the attention on things you hear, things you feel, mm-hmm. in the body. And just because the eyes are open, we're not necessarily using them to pay attention. Now, the irony is, when one is really visually focused, generally they have no aware of this, of what their body is doing. They're driving or anything else. The body just reacts. And generally when they're really visually focused, they're free of thought.
Mm.
And we look at the eyes as a tool. It's like, if you want to get free of thought and lose that sense of your body being kind of all binded together, it's like you can't make anything work, then allow them to get visual.
Mm.
Now, there's an irony here. Staring. A lot of people, when they think they need to do something, they stare. And the stare is okay for a second or two, maybe three, but then they freeze and they lose their focus.
Hmm.
So we like to encourage a lot of keep the eyes in motion. Know where you want them to be at the right time, but keep them in motion so that you don't freeze, you don't lose your focus, and then be looking at the right spot at the right time.
Now, when A lot of young kids, you know, and I know there's no simple solution right now, but a lot of young kids, let's take hitting. Are there any tips where for coaches where in a, and when they get in the batter's box, something that kids should be doing or thinking, or maybe not thinking, to kind of help them a little bit in tracking or identifying the pitch?
Well, I think one thing is before they get in the batter's box, if it's a game on deck circle in the hole or even out of the box, it's very good to take a practice swing where they can really feel the action they're wanting to put on it. And ironically, and this applies in golf as well, or any other sport, sometimes closing the eyes momentarily is a good way to do that. It really puts you in touch with the feel and the flow of energy, and actually requires you to get your balance just right. So that's one thing kids can do in the on-deck circle, dry swinging or closed eye swinging. Now, when they get in the box, it ought to be, we like to encourage that the hitting is first and foremost a vision task. And to do that, the task at hand is to see the ball really well, early and late. So where's it coming from? Identify that before you get in the box. Where's that pitcher's release point? And don't get there too early. Just got to get in rhythm with the pitcher, and then when the pitcher starts to turn, pulls the ball out of the glove, switch the eyes right to the contact. Now, Peter, you get me excited here to ask you this question, because here's the deal. You know, truthfully, so many kids and really professional players can't hit because whether they're conscious of it, but sometimes it's subconscious, fear. The biggest thing is fear. Oh, yeah. It's there all the time. Now, it may not be consciously there all the time, but it's there. So if a player knows, let's take a left-hander. And I've yet to see this outside of the left-handed hitters we've worked with. Left-handed hitters rarely are taught how to pick up the ball off of a left-hander. Mm. And particularly a left-hander coming three-quarter or sidearm. Well, there's a way to do it. And a left-handed hitter can hit off of a left-handed pitcher once he learns how to see the ball just as well as hit off a right-hander. But you have to have a method to do it.
Yeah.
And one reason that without that fear creeps in, and you see all kinds of crazy, wacky swings.
Yeah.
Because, and the left-handers, you know, I mean, look at this game. It's kind of amazing at the professional level. You don't have to be a great pitcher to earn a good living as a left-handed pitcher, because you always need them to come in and hit and get a pitch against a left-handed hitter.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But the hitters, on the other hand, they need to be taught how to see the ball from the left-hander, and they can be.
All right, now this is something I know we can't get in depth. It's going to be our last question. And remember, coaches, we're going to have a full show on this. We're going to get a lot more details. But we all, as coaches, set up a practice plan, right? And we have drills and we have stations and we're mostly working on fundamentals. Yeah. But the question is, why aren't we putting vision training as part of one of those stations every day?
Well, I think it'd be very wise. And you know, ironically, Ryan Harrison works with a lot of college softball teams, top teams, I mean the top 10, 15, and others, but they tend to do that. They tend to put it. He's got lots of visual drills in the hitting cages that they use in the cages while one player is hitting, the other is working on this other drill. And then there's some that can actually be put into the actual drilling process. But you're right. There's a lot of wasted time in practice. It's really hard to coach a lot of kids, you know. I mean, even if it's a team of 12. And it's a station can keep some of them busy, but at the same time, help them develop their visual capabilities.
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
It's a great idea.
And here's the final thing. Don't forget now, we're going to have more on the show with Dr. Harrison. But go to slowthegamedown.com, and you'll be able to see a lot of things that they do. It's outstanding. We spent time here. And if you think the vision training's boring for kids, it's not. They got a lot of great drills, that a lot of fun with kids that you can implement in practice. And I think that's going to be a key, because with anything else, we want to make sure the kids are having fun.
It needs to be fun. There's no question about it. And, you know, just aside, one of our fun drills gets the player moving, thinking, and seeing at the same time. And they have trouble with it at first.
Yes.
And then they learn, you know, if I see, I can then... you know, my body starts to react, and I can even process a thought. So we kind of help them learn how they can best go about things through these drills.
Yeah. Dr. Harrison, it was a pleasure. Thank you. I'm looking forward to having you on the full show.
Happy to be here, Pete. Thank you for the opportunity.
All right, that's Dr. Bill Harrison, and I am Pete Caliendo, your host for Baseball Outside the Box. Right now, we're going to continue our interview process. Right now, we have one of the best sports writers here in Canada and a Hall of Famer, Bob Elliott. And one of the things we wanted to talk about, Bob, first of all, I just want to thank Bob for being on the show, and then we'll get into our discussion. And this is even going to be an interview that kind of gives you a teaser, because later on we may get into a full interview about baseball with Bob. But right now, Bob, welcome to the show.
Nice to be here. Thank you very much for having me.
All right, now you've been, we were talking, you know, and you've been in the game over 35 years covering Major League Baseball. You've seen managers of all levels. And one of the things I think is interesting to our audience around the world, because it's coaches that are at all levels, you know, the qualities of managers or coaches that you've been around, why, what makes them, or what you think have made them successful in the game?
Well, I think there's a lot of different situations. Like I remember when I did the Expos, they said Dick Williams was too tough, and they brought in Jim Fanning, who was an easygoing players manager, and he had immediate success. But I think guys who did not depend on following, you know, having a qualities that were differed from the predecessor, you have to look at people like Whitey Herzog and Tony La Russa, like great managers, and some of their qualities. Whitey, I mean, Gary Templeton was a heck of a shortstop, and he made some gestures there that one day in St. Louis, and boom, he was gone the next day. That it was Whitey, pretty keen eye for talent, Whitey as well. He got a Hall of Famer in Ozzie Smith for the trade, and you know, it was Whitey's team. A lot of guys didn't, a lot of managers didn't have that situation, but he had a wonderful relationship with August Bush, and you know, he would make sure guys behaved. Now, the big thing that I'd never heard anybody say before, another manager, is what I've heard La Russa say. Someone asked him once, this was a prospective manager, he says, "What is your number one goal in spring training?" So you might think it's you know, get the pitchers ready, or work on infield plays or cutoffs or whatever, some of the basic things that they go through each spring. But La Russa's answer to this prospective manager was, take the umpires out of the game. He said he spends the whole 6 weeks harping on that with his new players, or when he took over a new team. And because you can see, like, it's a difficult game, as everyone knows, to play just 9 against 9 or whatever. But you start to play against the umpires too, then you run into a pile of trouble. You're outnumbered, and you get people, instead of playing the game with relaxed muscles like it's supposed to be played, you're playing angry and you're mad. Mm-hmm. And like I know a few teams. Like the Blue Jays, for example, like 3 or 4 years ago, they had complainers. Laurie complained, Yunel Escobar complained, Jose Bautista, and it just it would seem the strike zone would get smaller game by game, and that's no good. I mean, despite, I know there's pitches are missed, but how many times have we seen the umpire say, "You know what? You were right. That was outside." Mm-hmm. "You know what? I'm going to change that from 1-2 to 2-1. You were right."
Yeah.
That doesn't
that's
happen.
Not gonna happen.
So I mean, that was a very unusual thing. Another guy I really liked was Buck Rogers, who had the Montreal Expos in the 80s, and his team overachieved, and he was the first guy I ever saw that basically, if you were the bench guy, he told you the day before you were playing, and he got you a couple of games a week, and he told the guy that the day before, you're getting tomorrow off, so if you want to go out tonight or whatever. And Cito Gaston, I mean, he never won the Manager of the Year award despite a number of successful winning seasons, and he won back-to-back World Series in 92 and 93. But he took over in 89, which he probably should have won, but he lost to Frank Robinson. But he took over a team from Jimmy Williams. It was 12-24, and he caught the Orioles on the last Saturday of the season. But he just let guys play. They traded for Robbie Alomar, and the knock on Robbie Alomar from San Diego was that when Templeton got hurt, he would not flip over and go to shortstop. I'm a second baseman. And they said he was a bit of a childish baby. That was the reports out of San Diego. So he comes to Toronto and at the 90 winter meetings, and halfway through the 93 season, they're trying to repeat. Dick Schofield's a shortstop. He breaks his leg, season-ending surgery. So I just happened to be, myself and Larry Milson from the Globe and Mail, we happened to be in Gaston's office, and knock, knock, knock at the door, and Robbie says, "Hey, Skip, you want, I'll play shortstop to tomorrow," you know, whatever. And the other, and he was a big part of those two teams, and he's the first Blue Jay ever elected to the Hall of Fame. And the other guy Cito had a tremendous, tremendous impact on was Devon White, who they received from the Angels at the same winter meetings in 90 at the O'Hare Hyatt in Rosemount. And he was so bad the year before that they sent him to AAA Edmonton because Doug Rader, the manager, tried to change and get him to swing down on the ball and cut down on his strikeouts. So he comes over to Toronto. So there's two guys with like a knocks on them, and Cito just said, "Hey, you're only going to hit first, the first inning, and then do whatever you want." And you know, he hit 25, 30 home runs. He struck out a bunch. He stole a bunch of bases, and he was a Gold Glove center fielder. And probably made the catch on the only triple play in World Series history, except the umpire missed it, and it wasn't called a triple A.
Wow. What qualities have you seen the difference now between managers, you know, I want to say not of the past, but managers before and current managers now, because you're dealing with different type of athletes in some ways. Is there a difference in how they're managing individuals that our coaches can learn from? Because if you don't change with the times, they say, sometimes you just may not stick with them.
Yeah, I think you're right there. Like a lot of the guys, like Earl Weaver and Billy Martin, the guys that would scream and yell and shout, I mean, that can't be done. I know I talked to Mark Burley once, who is a very, very respected left-hander. Pitched for the White Sox and pitched for Toronto, and I asked him about Gibbons once, and he said he's the best he ever played for. And I said, "Well, why is that?" And he says, "Well, it's not because he took me out early or let me stay in late or whatever." I said, "All right, what is it?" And he said, "Well, he lets if we have a Thursday off day and I pitch Tuesday, and there's really no need. I'm not going to be pitching on Wednesday. He'll let me go home Wednesday morning, go back home to outside of Missouri." So, like, when I think back to when I started, Dick Williams and Sparky and Whitey Herzog, some of those guys, nobody would be given a day off. I mean, maybe somebody had to go home, their father was ill or the mother was ill or something like that, or a funeral, but there's no way you give the guy an extra day to go home and see his kids or go hunting or whatever. You know, that's just a different generation. And you can't admonish, like, a lot of those old-time guys, they would rip in the paper their players and to get a reaction, you know. That you don't see that anymore. Mm-hmm. I think another aspect which has changed is I think a lot of instances I don't think the general manager phones down the seventh inning and says, "Hey, pitch Freddie instead of Joey." But I think a lot of it is discussed at 5 o'clock or in the morning or whenever. "Hey, if we're up by a run in the seventh inning today, we're going to use this guy, not him anymore." And I think that's the way it goes. So the managers aren't as powerful. I remember when Pete Rose managed the Reds, he said there's three groups in the clubhouse. There's the one third of the team that they need to kick in the butt to get going, and then there's one third that just needs the pat on the back, and then the other third, they don't need anything. Just leave them alone. Don't because if you kick them in the butt and they're very sensitive, their performance is just going to go down, you know. And I've heard other managers say that.
Have a lot of managers during when it starts to get the playoff time, do you see differences in some of the managers, you know, because now there's a little bit more pressure coming on the games?
Yeah, things get tight when, you know, instead of like four or five writers and TV and broadcasters, now all of a sudden there's 350 or 500 or whatever it is. But I'll give you an example of John Gibbons last year in Arlington. There was a longtime writer there. His two boys are going off to university this semester, or this September coming up. And they're both football players. So Gibbons asked, he said, hey, what are you going to do with your boys? Have they made a decision yet? He says, well, he said, there's about four schools in the running. There was two in California, one in Minnesota, and then Trinity in San Antonio, which is where Gibbons is from. So Gibbons let it drop. But then they got outside on the field, and Gibbons called him over, and he says, hey, you got a pen? He said, yes. And Gibbons said, well, write down these numbers. So he gave the guy his cell and his home number, and he said, look, if your kids decide on coming to Trinity in San Antonio, you know, here's my numbers. If they ever need anything, you know, don't hesitate to call. Which is the guy, you know, the guy is not going to be writing daily. John Gibbons was a great manager. He made a good move. He's just a kind-hearted soul, you know, and very comfortable in his own space, I would say. Yeah.
That's awesome, Bob. We really appreciate your time. I know we've had a great time here in Vancouver. Always great seeing you, and thank you for being on the show.
A pleasure, Peter. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right, that's Bob Elliott, Hall of Famer, Sports Hall from Canada. He is one of the best. And that concludes the show for today. We had some great, great guests on the show, starting off with Dr. Tom House leading off, and then batting second, Jeff Kruschel, batting third, Dr. Bill Harrison, and a cleanup hitter, Bob Elliott. I want to thank all our guests for being on the show. That was really a lot of fun, and we hope that you learned a lot. Now, we will have some of the guys on the show again. Whoever we did not interview prior to this for over an hour on past shows, we'll have on future ones. So to know about when they're coming up, go to baseballoutsidethebox.com, go to the Stitcher or iTunes logo, click that on, join the show. You'll always get announcements on when new shows come up. You can always go back and look at all the prior shows. That's what's great about podcasts. At the same time, if you got some time, please give us a five-star review if you really like the show. That would really help the show get out. Join us on all our social media. We're at Twitter, at BaseballOut. We've got a lot of instructional information on Twitter. We also have it on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/baseballoutsidethebox. Finally, don't forget, email me at info@baseballoutsidethebox.com. Any questions, any critiques you have about the show, any suggestions, whatever you have, if it's about baseball development, email me all your questions. Love getting them. I'll email you back right away. Don't forget one last thing, to go to the website if you'd like to order my 5-set baseball instructional DVDs, which cover over 100 games, drills, and skills that will help you run a fun and organized practice. Again, special thank you to Dr. Tom House, Jeff Kruschel, Dr. Bill Harrison, and Bob Elliott for being on the show. Remember, everybody, coaches' education is the key to building the foundation of our sport. So keep getting smarter by listening to the show that interviews baseball's best coaching minds with innovative thoughts that love to challenge the status quo. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo, from Vancouver, Canada, saying goodbye, and we'll see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.